Fiend behind the fiend, behind the fiend, behind the fiend. Mastodon with mastery. Monster with an ache in the tooth of the ego. The dead drunk judge. Wheresoever thou art, our agony will find thee. Enthroned on the darkest altar of our heartbreak. Perfect. Beast. Brute. Bastard. Oh, dog, my God. I don't see the God, right? Now I'm going to miss the whole point of this. It seems to me that he's worshiping the dog, right? Fiend, dog, mastodon, tooth. I miss the point of a lot of things. Well, try again. Wheresoever thou art, our agony will find thee, enthroned on the darkest altar of our heartbreak. Perfect. Beast. Brute. Bastard. Oh, dog, my God. Sacred Elegy, number 5, George Barker. You almost have to pay attention to something that starts out with the fiend, behind the fiend, behind the fiend, behind the fiend. That sort of piques the curiosity. And the mastodon with mastery, monster with an ache and the truth of the ego, the dead man giant.
These long, strange nights, these long, strange nights, these long, strange nights.
That's when I was barricaded out here. And, let's see what the trials begin. Well, that's when Keith Troop came over the fence to volunteer the services of the NACDL, the National Criminal Lawyers Association. Or defense attorney. What is it?
National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers.
And it turned into a war very quickly. Meanwhile, here I had a book, an impossible book deadline. Suddenly I'm arrested for 5 felonies, 3 misdemeanors, headed for prison. And that's what, that was the baleful consensus of a lot of people. It was my, I'd gone too far this time. Put a gun to her head, ripped off her nipples. Whatever it was, it didn't look too good. 8 felonies, or 8 charges, 5 felonies, 3 misdemeanors. You're bound to be, Ben was one or some of them. Can't win them all. But I decided, yeah, we had to win them all. And, hang on. I had to write Andrew as a story. That was all I got. Well, I wrote it one night, just, the pressure gets so bad sometimes that things come out sideways, you know, it's like you step on the soap too hard and it goes somewhere else. Well, Andrew was like a bar of soap. I was, you know, still in the anger stage. But the trials begin as a joke I've had with Jack Nicholson for a long time about who's going to go on trial soon. Well, I did, and he will, I'll see to it.
Let the trials begin. He that goes to law holds a wolf by the ears. Robert Burton, Anatomy of Melancholy. I wandered into a library last week and decided to do a quick bit of reading on the law, which has caused me some trouble recently. It was a cold, mean day, and my mood was not much different. The library was empty at that hour of the morning. It was closed, in fact, but not locked, so I went in. Far up at the top of the long stone staircase, I could see a small man gesturing at me, waving at me, shouting. But his voice sounded crazy and scattered, like the screeching of a cat or the sound of beer bottles exploding in a garbage compactor. The only words I could hear were out and night. When I got about halfway up the stairs, I stopped and raised both hands. Don't worry, I shouted, police. He shuddered and fell back, saying nothing. His eyes were huge, and a shudder ran through his body as I approached. No problem, I said to him. Just routine police work. I flashed my gold special DEA agent badge at him, then reached out to shake hands, but he moaned suddenly and leaped away. And as he collapsed awkwardly on the cold marble floor, I saw that his left ankle was encircled by a heavy steel band that was strapped to a black box. What the fuck is that thing? I asked him. reaching down to help him up. But he scuttled away again, and then he hissed at me. "You know what it is," he whimpered. "You filthy, murdering pig." "What?" I said. "Are you crazy?" Then I jumped down on him and grabbed his foot so I could bring him a little closer. He uttered another sharp, terrified cry as I slid him across the smooth floor, pulled his ankle up to where it was right in front of my eyes. "Be quiet," I said. "I want to look at this thing in good light." He struggled briefly, but I quickly stepped over his leg and hyperextended his knee until it went rigid. Then I braced him and examined the box. It was a standard-issue body beeper with a lock-on ankle bracelet, one of the new-age tools now available to law enforcement agencies everywhere for the purposes of electronic house arrest for those who have been brought within the system, but for whom there is no room in the crowded jails, pens, and prisons. The United States of America has more people locked up than any other country in the world, including Cuba and South Africa. Our prison system from coast to coast is bulging at the seams. Hundreds more are being crammed in every day. More and more of them saddled with the mandatory sentences and no parole provisions that came in with the first Reagan administration, which began only 10 years ago, but seems like 20 or 30. Indeed, but that is another very long story, and we will save it for later. So let's get back to the library and my new buddy, the unfortunate prisoner that I seized and captured by accident at 4 o'clock in the morning when I caught him wandering aimlessly through the halls of a massive public building with his eyes bulged out and his spine like rubber, probably his nuts on fire too because he had nothing to say for himself and no excuse for anything. He was a loser, a wimp full of fear with no pride and sure as hell no money. But I let him go anyway, and we talked for a while in the men's room about his problem. We were both nervous, so I went out to the car and got a bag of warm beers out of the car, along with a wooden pipe about half full of good marijuana. Soon we were both in a better mood. I told him I was not really the police, just another good old boy with a yen to read law for a while and a few hours to spare before my next court appearance. He was a first-time offender from Phoenix, serving work release time in the library on a 6-year attempted rape charge that happened when he wandered into the ladies' room at the airport. Got into a fight with 2 Mexican women who said that they were paid police informants, turned him in as a sex offender. When the airport police finally ran him down in a false doorway at the far end of the lost luggage hangar and dragged him away in handcuffs to the red carpet club, where they subjected him to a loud and humiliating strip search and beat him on the kidneys with iron gloves. He was innocent, he said, but it made no difference. When they finally got him to jail, he was charged with 9 felonies, including aggravated assault on a police officer, gross sexual imposition, and possession of 2,000 marijuana seeds that fell out of the lining of a suitcase he had borrowed from his son for the trip. That night he was beaten severely in a holding cell by a gang of sodomites who took all his cigarettes and then kicked him into a coma. After 33 days in the jail hospital, he was assigned to a public defender who laughed at his case and called him shit eyes, said it was all a matter of money. 10 weeks later he was assigned to another lawyer who said he had no choice but to plead guilty and take his medicine like a man. "I was lucky," he said. "I almost got 16 years. He grinned happily and stared vacantly into my eyes. "As it is now, I'll only have to do 5. He was broken, a niggardly shell of a man, so afraid of the law and the cops and the courts that he felt lucky and grateful to be serving only 5 years instead of 16, even though he was innocent. But now, after 2 long years on his knees within the system, he no longer missed standing up. It made me nervous, so I started pacing around in circles on the white tile floor, jabbing distractedly at him from time to time. I was thinking. My mind was running at top speed, scanning and sorting my options. They ranged all the way from dumb and dangerous to crazy, evil, and utterly wrong from the start. "Do you keep any whiskey in this place?" I asked him. "We need whiskey. My brain is getting hazy." He stared at me for a moment. Then he smiled vaguely and stood up. "Sure," he said. "I think I can put my hands on a pint of Old Crow." He chuckled. "What the hell? I could use some whiskey myself." He slid down off the marble wash basin where he'd been sitting and shuffled out of the room. He moved quickly and almost gracefully, but the ugly black box on his ankle slowed him down and caused him to walk with a limp. I sat on my own basin and drank our last warm beer. "What the hell am I doing here?" I wondered. "I'm a doctor of journalism, a man of the cloth. Why am I slumped in a bathroom at the public library at 4 in the morning, drinking whiskey and smoking marijuana with a soul-dead convict who might be taken back in jail at any moment?" "What's your name?" I asked him as he returned with a half-finished pint of whiskey in a brown bag. "Andrew," he said. "They call me Andy." "Okay, Andrew," I said. "Give me that whiskey and stand back. We are on the brink. Yes, I have an idea." He tossed me the bottle and I drank deeply, then handed it back to him. "Don't worry about having this stuff on your breath when they come for you," I said. "I have a new electric toothbrush out in the car that will sterilize your whole thorax in 10 seconds. I also have some very fine cocaine downstairs in the car, which you might want to use when your eyes start looking like they do now." I slapped him on the leg and hit the old crow again. "Hot damn, Andrew," I barked at him. "We are warriors. The time has come to rumble." He said nothing. The bottle of whiskey was tilted high over his face, and I could see that he was finishing it off. "So what?" I thought. "We can always get more. The whiskey store is open at 7, and I don't have to be in court until 10. There was plenty of time to do anything we wanted. Many wrongs could be righted in 5 hours if we had the right tools. "Well, Andrew," I said to him in a high-pitched, mournful voice, "I hate to be the one to tell you this. I don't want to hurt you, but..." "No," he shouted, "please don't kill me." I seized him quickly by the hair and jerked him off balance. His eyes rolled back in his head, and he went limp. "Stop whining," I snapped. "I just want to tell you about a legal axiom." "Bullshit," he croaked. "You're a goddamn vicious maniac." He jerked out of my grasp and leaped away, and then he braced on the balls of his feet, bashed me in the stomach with a frenzied right hook. "You bastard," he screamed. "Get away from me. You're a paranoid psychotic." "We're going to court, Andrew. We are champions. We will crush them like cheap roaches. Today's pig is tomorrow's bacon." I spun suddenly and hurled my green beer bottle so fast across the room that it exploded against the wall like a glass bomb before he even saw it happen. Bang! Whirling like Quisenberry, catching a runner on the knot at second. Fantastic speed and accuracy. No reason at all. But Andrew went crazy with joy, and I had to subdue him physically and give him a chance to calm down. It was almost dawn. "Where are the telephones?" I asked him. "Where's the fax machine?"